Hey, Jeff. Hey, Appa. So anybody remembers what we did last time? Sherry?
You left us with the fact that to understand bhakti yoga, we have to know that we're loved. That the love, that we have to let ourselves be loved and know and have that knowledge of how much we're loved.
That's the virtue. We have to cultivate. And what is that virtue? That virtue is called love. Now, as bhakti yoga is translated as yoga of love and devotion, you invest only what you have. Where do you first earn this love? Love for who? Love for what? No? There is whole methodology how we earn this great virtue of love. This is a method of contemplation. To look at our life, look at everything that is around us, look at the world, worldly objects and all aspects of nature. What is so abundantly available in nature? There are three terms used: prakasha means light, and kriya means activity, action, and sthiti means stability, groundedness. These are three basic properties. Parallel to them is called sattva, rajas, tamas. There are few words throughout literature have been very much, have gotten bad reputation, only because we don't know what we are talking about. Tamas is one of them. Like, oh, tamas. Something very bad, dark, as though if we don't need it. It is a force. It's force of that which makes us get grounded, stability. Now, look at nature. Once we know that how abundantly these things are available everywhere, and where it comes from, and how it's... Wow! How come I couldn't... How did I not pay attention to that? You came today? You will be here for a few days, no?
Then we have to leave tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Shelley? Hi, why tomorrow? It means we are not doing something enough here to keep you here for.
I wish I could stay. I have to work. Shine my light.
Okay. So let's see if Shiva Sutra is enticing enough to get you in July.
Oh, I hope I
can. Yeah, we just sent, yesterday we did it. Yeah. We announced it. And, okay. These three things, sattva, rajas and tamas, prakash, kriya and sthiti, they constitute core of our being. They constitute the core of everything that exists. These are called the divine forces. Intrinsic to the divinity, intrinsic to what we call God, Ishvara. And it is intrinsic to Ishvara. And intrinsic means which is not separate from Ishvara. So let's see, in our daily religious, as part of our religious practice. Normally what we do prayer. Every prayer has some sense of invocation. We try to invoke and feel the presence of divinity in our life. Quite often, it comes all the way to making the divinity as personal as possible, as tangible we can. It's like that divinity is right there with us, for us. It's as individual as we are. That's fine. The thing is here, what we are trying to understand, what we are trying to do is feel the actual presence of the divinity. And in order to do that, for example, we do prayers. Try to just remember one prayer. You tell me one prayer very slowly, slowly. One person I need, one volunteer. Yeah, Lauren? Yeah, you go ahead. Yeah. Any prayer in English language, translation or anything that you, or just even if you want to do prayer, what will you do as part of your prayer to, you know, express your love, faith, devotion to the divinity? Anything, just anything that comes into your mind as part of prayer, or which anything which you may be doing, you know. Mm-hmm. And the next person I will have Sandy, and then another person I will have Madalsa, and then let's say somehow I don't know why I'm only selecting the goddesses. One we need one male figure, yes, you know, so. So what do you say, what do you do in order to do that?
I wash my hands and my feet and my
okay. Okay, that's fine,
but
that's fine.
Pre-prayer or
okay, that's fine too, that's fine too.
Okay, then I come into breath and I find my system at the heart. Yeah. That's where my prayer is seated.
Purity, purification. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, what you do?
And then I do sampradaya, so I
invoke. Okay,
the
very good.
Invoke the teachings. Mm-hmm. And,
good.
Get out of my own way. Yes.
Very good. Let me explain now, only this, which, you know, before I lose the, track of all the components, what you do. First thing what you are doing is, you are washing your hands, cleaning yourself. And there is a sense of washing off, cleansing, getting rid of, which makes your body, your mind, and your senses feel somewhat a little bit unclean. So that at least one tiny layer of dust is removed. And that creates an environment for you and the divinity you are trying to experience be a little bit closer, less thinner. The wall has become thinner. No? You feel a sense of presence a little bit more intimately than you were doing before. Mm-hmm. Mentally you are prepared. Behind this preparation there is an understanding that divinity is there. Divinity knows that you are there. You know? Divinity knows that you are trying to reach, feel and experience the divinity. You know it, that divinity is fully aware of your presence. And this is your part that you have to do, that is, do little cleansing. After once the whole thing is done, then you settle down. For example, you come to your meditation place, puja place, depending on what kind of flavor you have. Some of us have more of religious flavor, some of us have more of a, and there is ritualistic element in it. Some of do not have that ritualistic element in it. Therefore, depending on whatever we do, but the whole idea is then you settle down. So see here, there comes purity. You are, what you are invoking is, you are invoking sattva, purity, light, illumination. Then what else you are doing? You are settling down. That is, you are invoking the divine aspect of your tamas. Look at, no? Divine aspect of your tamas. Tamas, that which is, when we are careful about the sacred awareness, the divine awareness, the godly, you know, component of God's this particular property called tamas, then that's what leads us to inertia, laziness, sloth, carelessness, you know, state of forgetfulness, confusion, doubt, you know. But what you are doing is, you are invoking that divine in you that has manifested in the form of stability. Even at your very, very, very atomic level, subatomic level, cellular level, there is constant movement going on. And yet, despite all that movement, there is a force of stability inside the body. That's why those different cells and different tissues made of those cells and different organs made of many, many tissues do not fly away. No? So that's what you are doing. And you are doing it actively. It's not a passive thing. Passive way of feeling the presence of divinity is always there as long as you are not angry, cranky, agitated, and fearful, slothful. It's there. Cheerfulness itself, you are happy, you are peaceful, you are happy. That automatically it means, you know, you are somewhat there, feeling the presence of the divine. However, it's not active. What you do in meditation, what you do when you are doing your recitation of some prayer, or your scriptures, or when you are offering, let's say, flower or incense, or when you are burning, when you are walking into your church, there's active phenomena in you, in your body, in your mind, in your consciousness. It's not just a passive way of looking at God and or divinity. And that's what is happening here. It's when you are very actively attending that peaceful state, which you know that peacefulness, stillness is the doorway to reach the divinity. And that is your rajas kriya. When you are engaging, it's active engagement in your active engagement in the process that enables you to acquire and retain a peaceful state that comes from rajas. These both rajas and tamas are fully supported and illuminated by sattva. And that's what here you are doing it. Then you bring your hands to your heart, or then you start. Then you next thing you are doing is very important that you are doing. That is, you are invoking the presence of lineage teacher. Amazing thing here. You are born and raised in the United States of America. Before you started your yoga practices and sadhana, or you were not familiar with this, quote, Indian tradition, but somehow you had a feeling that there is much higher reality and there must be some way of experiencing it. Perhaps even before you got interested in yoga, you may have already studied, let's say, Greek philosophy, for example. No. mythology. You may have been interested in symbolism, you know, or you may have been quite much involved in your church, or you may have been your family may have been involved in your church, and somewhat you felt that what you were looking for was not so readily available in the church. Let me find it. Probably it might be somewhere outside the walls of the church. That may have taken you to another kind of church, another kind of temple, another kind of mosque. So the whole idea is that you know that there is something much deeper and I wish to experience it. Then you got introduced to yoga. See here how natural it is that one day you learned that there is something called parampara. How exciting it is to know that there is parampara, there is a tradition. And tradition means there is a line of yogis, saints, sages, good people, learned people, where there is a that lineage stands on the foundation of selflessness, unconditional love. Is there. And then comes the next layer of understanding which evolved in you, that these sages are real. And the sages whom you are invoking, and the lineage that is comprised of those sages you are invoking, you have not met any of those sages. Even their name is so foreign to you, but you feel so good about it. You have not seen their faces. You have not even seen their photo. You do not know where they lived. And the day you come to know that such and such sage did his practice while sitting on that rock, suddenly you fall in love with that rock. And there is an association that this rock is sacred. And it's not necessary that rock is, from any artistic standards, is really very superbly designed, crafted, rock. It's just a piece of rock. But there is an enormous feeling for it. So you make a point of visiting that rock, and you feel very uncomfortable to call that piece of rock a rock. So minimum word you add next to it is sacred rock. Call it sacred rock. And hopefully, and when your love and grows about it, when you come closer to whatever that rock contains, then at some point you have a hard time calling it even sacred rock. You call it shrine, you call it divine mother. No? See here where is it coming from? It is coming from a place in you where you know it very well that there is a reality which is very real, and that reality does not need to be, that reality is beyond our senses. It is not perceptible to senses. Beyond our even imagination. And that reality is very real. And that reality you want to touch and feel and experience and embrace. That tells us that we are fitted with the tools and means to experience the presence of divinity, which transcends our knowledge of the phenomenal world. Right. And there is such a great desire to feel it, touch it, experience it. Despite the fact that stock market doesn't care for it. despite the fact there is no monetary value attached to it. And somewhere deep in your heart, you are so aware of its importance that you feel very childish to make a deal with that reality. Even when you are sick, when you are suffering, even when you lose your job, when you lose your loved ones, under desperation, you may pray to the divinity to fix your problem. But when you come to your more balanced state of mind, you find it very childish. What am I asking? It is very childish. It is very superficial. I should not be behaving like this. No? And nobody is telling you to think this way. It's just happening. It means what you are looking for this divinity, from this divinity, is something of much, much, much superior nature than anything that exists in the world. And you know, and at the same time you know, that that reality is right here in this very world. It stands there in the backdrop of everything that exists. And somehow you are fully aware of the fact that that is the soul of anything that exists. You are invoking that. Now, other amazing thing is, somewhere you are deriving your joy from a very well-established belief that the divinity may or may not have ears to hear, and yet it hears it. The divinity you are invoking may or may not have eyes to see you, what you are doing, and yet it sees it. You know? Divinity may or may not have head and nervous system to really see, really understand, comprehend what you are trying to communicate, and yet you know that it knows it. This realization is there. Only thing is, this realization is still quite diffused. During the time when you sit in your meditation or at your puja time, during your rituals, you are recollecting that realization and putting that realization into practice, into action. That's what you are doing. And you are doing it every day. So what it does, it keeps it concentrates that Shakti which is all-pervading and everywhere. So there is a prayer, for example, very, very, very first prayer we do during our fire offering. It's called Vishwedeva Sukta invocation, you know, to the divine forces coming from nature. So the right, very first mantra is, Om Ano Bhadra Kartavo Yantu Vishwato Adabdaso Aparitasa Udhvidaha Diva Noyatha Sadmidaprade Asanna Praivo Rakshitaro Divi Divi. It's a beautiful translation. It is Om Ano Bhadra Kartavo Vishwato. A means from every direction, in every respect, from every side, from every direction. No Bhadra Kartavaha. Auspicious forces which enable, which transform a simple action into sacred rituals. No? May those forces of nature, divine forces, come from every direction to us. Anuvadra kartavo yantu viswato. From every nook and cranny of the universe, may those forces today come here. So, what does it mean? You are confirming, reaffirming your own conviction, your own understanding that every nook and cranny of the world, phenomenal world, is pervaded by this Shakti. By doing so, you are transcending your self-created limitation that this is this versus that. This is good, but that is bad. This is small, that is big. This is desirable, that is undesirable. This one is source of pain, that one is source of pleasure. No. This is valuable and that is not valuable. No. This thing I should try to achieve and that thing I should try to get rid of. This is a world we have created for ourselves. And most of the times we are living in that self-created world, our own very unique world, where our world is very, very well saturated with our likes and dislikes, our attachment and repulsion. No? Avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, and avinivesha. Ignorance, sense of this self-identity and attachment, aversion, etc. And this world is filled with fear and anger and temptation. You know? And we are constantly busy in protecting the world we have created. You know? And we are constantly seeing how ill-designed is this world. The entire structure is so poor. Foundation of the world we have created is very poor. The entire structure that we have erected on this foundation is so poor that it is falling apart every day and our entire energy is going into fixing it. From early childhood all the way to our last phase of our life, we are constantly involved and engaged in fixing the world we have created. You know? We are not realizing that law of change is inevitable, unstoppable. You know? Parinama, tapa, you know? Parinama. Constant change is law of nature. You can't stop it. So better you get some help from much higher forces which are in you, outside you, all around you. Get some help from those forces to use that, you know, continuous law, you know, force of change as a transformative change. There is a difference between an ordinary change and transformation. Transformation, the word transformation, has a positive, you know, feeling in it. Change is happening regardless you like it or you do not like it. Okay? And if you fight against it, if you stand against it, you will be broken into pieces and you will be swept away. You know? And that's very painful. So better you invoke the much higher forces inside you and outside you and all around you to help you correct, to help you transform the phenomena of change so that change is no longer just an ordinary change, but rather it is transformation, transformative thing. So it's like you are transforming the world inside you. You are, and by transforming that world, what we mean is that you are transforming your self-created world. Little world, which is so saturated with anger, hatred, jealousy, greed, fear, attachment, desire, and which is so constantly fed by, nurtured by, you know, ignorance, our distorted sense of self-identity, you know, attachment, aversion, and fear of loss. You know? And we know it. And this is what here we have to pay a conscious attention to this phenomena that there is this reality. And also we have to look at little bit further that see who is successful in the world. Those who are able to be in, the greater in touch you are with that reality, the more successful you are. And how do you measure that success? You measure it by looking at the depth of your peacefulness, and the joy that comes from that peacefulness and stillness. Now, this is what is happening here in your case. Now, let me ask Sandy. Sandy, what prayer do you do? I'm just asking a prayer, not whole ritual, not the practice, but just a prayer. What is your most favorite prayer? If it is in Sanskrit, translate it. If it is in English, then no need of translating it.
The one I use the most often is before food, free from eating.
Okay. Can you translate it? Good. Wonderful.
It's not literal,
that's okay. Yeah, that's the summary. That's the essence of it. Yeah. Everything's from Brahman, from, you know, and for Brahman. What does it mean? It is connecting you to the very root. There is a feeling of renouncing the credit that normally we collect, we gather for ourselves. We work hard, make money, then we go and buy food from that money. Or we are a farmer, for example, we work hard, we grow rice, corn, potato, whatever, and then we harvest it. And then we have a clear sense of ownership over what we harvested. Okay. What we are trying to do here is renounce that ownership. Clearly, this food that, you know, where you are doing this prayer, there is somebody who grew that food, whether it is rice, dal, meat, egg, or whatever it is. Then somebody prepped it, somebody cooked it, somebody served it. There's so much has gone into the food. By the time it comes in our plate and we are about to eat, there is a whole chain of actions was combinedly, you know, brought this food in the plate, and it is now we are seeing it, touching it, feeling it, and putting it in our mouth. And despite all these things which at physical level of our reality, which is definitely not from God, not from Brahman, it is from a farmer in California, you know. It is from Wegman. Yeah. It is from the kitchen of the Himalayan Institute. No. It is from those who cooked it. And most immediately, it is from those who served it. And we are saying, it is from Brahman for Brahman. Wow. Where is that Brahman where you are saying it is for Brahman? So somewhere, what you are doing, you are acknowledging a very essential fact pertaining to the reality. That in ultimate analysis, it comes from higher reality. If higher reality were not there, even this world could not have existed. If that reality had not shared its intelligence with us, we would not have learned the art of farming. If that intelligence were not there, we would not have learned the art of irrigation, would not have been able to manufacture tools and means tools for farming, machines. Had intelligence, had that higher reality had not shared its intelligence with us, there would not have been trucking company and the driver. And this wonderful potato and tomato would not have reached all the way to our kitchen. There is higher intelligence, that is Brahman. And there is higher intelligence right inside us. And it is this higher intelligence is accepting it, only then the nutrients will be available, will be made available to our limbs and organs of our body. Otherwise, we'll suffer from all kinds of problems. Sometimes it's same bodies, same food, same preparation and everything. You do not even feel eating it. Why? You think that you are sick. Sick means something that intelligence has withdrawn its support to you. And therefore, the intelligence that was manifesting in you in the form of appetite is somehow withdrawn. And in order to awaken that intelligence again, you are doing lots of prayers. And at that time, the conduit for our prayer may be immunostim. There is a reality that is manifesting in Pat Klein. There is a higher intelligence that is manifesting in the form of love and compassion, which just suddenly makes. Abha moves, just Abha, that she picks up this packet, that packet, and sends to the one who needs, who is in need of that extra love and attention. So that appetite returns, food is digested, nutrients are made available to our, you know, system. Normally, all these things are happening every day, every moment, all the time throughout our life. But we are not paying attention to it. Bhakti yoga means to pay attention to it. The prayer that you do, Om Brahma Arpanam, no, that is Sandhya's prayer. Om Brahma Arpanam, Brahma Havir, Brahma Agno, Brahma Rahutam, Brahma Yutena, Gantabhyam, Brahma Karma, Samadhina. Furthermore, look at Sandhya. Perhaps I don't do this prayer. Because I have some extra deposit right here. But Sandhya doesn't have it. Sandhya is motivated. Sandhya is motivated to do many, many other good things. But the thing is, there is a reason why somebody is drawn to a particular prayer, someone is drawn to some other kind of prayer. Why we are drawn to a particular type of God and why somebody is drawn to a goddess. You know. Sometimes it is also whole collective consciousness moves in a particular direction for a long time, for example. Women have been neglected. When you look at Indian literature, every yoga book you read, it's all as though if it is, you know, written for men. You know? And when they are talking about certain feelings and you know, the practices for, you know, somehow, they never felt need for discovering or, let's say, inventing siddhasana, equivalent asana, which is more conducive to or comfortable for women. It never felt, then people never did not feel that strongly. Therefore, when this realization became very vivid, and there was a movement, very, very strong collective movement to conceive the idea of God as female goddess. Okay? So now people are looking, seeking their own self-identity. And that self-identity means they are seeking much deeper self-identity. What does it mean to be man or woman? And when things have become clearer and clearer and clearer and more acceptable and more pronounced out there, people, those who are somewhere half on the side of men and women, you know, as you may know what I'm talking about, they are looking for, what does my identity means? And this is not something new. You read the Mantra Shastra, you read the numberless scriptures where, quote, female goddesses, name for female goddesses are in masculine gender, and names for male divinities are in feminine gender. And to overcome even the idea of God, whether God is one or many, the language has been used in the literature where you must express where you must address one God with plural number, in plural number. And plurality of God to be expressed in singular number. No? What does it mean? These are the ways of making sure that our head gets it. You know? Throughout literature, you will find Durga mantra. Durga is, in mantric context, the word Durga is not Durga. It's not long A. It is neuter gender plural. Sandy will know, some of you will know, that in Sanskrit language, the word Durga as a feminine gender noun will be declined as Durga, Durge, Durgaha, like Rama, Rame, Ramaha. No? So, but the word Durga, when it is used as a mantra, it's never Durga, and it's never singular number, never masculine gender, feminine gender. It's always neuter gender. Let the men and women be absorbed into her. Finished, It's all, it is in neuter gender and plural number. Wow. So what is they trying to do is, they are with all these mantras and the prayers and the different application of rituals, we are trying to enhance our understanding of and the feeling of the divinity that pervades and permeates every nook and cranny of the universe. The more we accomplish this process, the more we fall in love with the divinity. Now let me take you to another example. One of the things you may have noticed, and I'm giving example of Christian tradition. One of the things you may have noticed that when someone is conferred a title of saint, what are mainly the things that church looks for before it gives a title, it makes somebody saint? Can you tell me?
Miracle.
And what are those miracles? Healing, some sort of healing. Saint came in dream and healed. Or saint, while he or she was alive, had healed people in an extraordinary manner. Look here, the block in our head. If turmeric heals you, it's not a big deal. Because we have a hard time acknowledging the presence of the divinity in a piece of turmeric. Somewhere our ego comes in the way. Turmeric is a product that we acquire, trade, and consume. It is a commodity, we make money out of it. Turmeric is a helpless plant. It's totally dependent on us. If we provide water, it will grow. If we don't give water, it will dry and die. We are very intelligent people. We know that in which kind of climate turmeric grows, and therefore we plant turmeric there. Many, many such herbs, whether it's withania, whether it's ginseng, or anything that in the nature you think that it has healing power. So there is a sense of us being superior, smarter and more intelligent than all these plants. We take care of these plants, only then these plants survive, otherwise they will die. Look at, no? This sense of our asmita. This inferiority, superiority, infected sense of identity that does not allow us to see the manifestation of the healing power, the divinity in turmeric. Very clearly, if we do not eat our food for a few days, we feel weak. And yet, we have such a hard time seeing or experiencing, feeling the presence of divinity in our food. That's what Sandy is trying to do here. She is, at least for that particular moment, she is trying to invoke this feeling and acknowledge this truth. And in the process, connect, come closer to the divinity and connect yourself with that divinity. But in many other ways, if it has happened in a somewhat in non-traditional manner, in an extraordinary way, then we call that person holy man or holy woman. And still, to make sure that this person's extraordinary realization and the achievement that manifests from that realization does not take away my credibility and image. Therefore, wait till this person dies and then we give the title of saint to this person. Okay? Why? And in many cases, these things have happened during the lifetime of the person who is now 50 years later, 70 years later, 100 years later, is going to be declared as saint. Those things have happened during the lifetime of that person. Okay. However, that's another story. But look at what blocks us, what blocks our comprehension of that much more subtle and potent reality that is constantly providing nourishment, guidance, and protection to us. Our asmita, our ego. In bhakti yoga, that is the very, very first thing we are trying to train and tame. Now, this asmita part. So it begins with a very well chalked out plan whereby we expand our worldview and we get settled in a worldview that has less obstruction for experiencing the presence of divinity in everything and in everyone. Siya Ramamay Sab Jag Jani. This is a beautiful passage from Ramayana, that you have to see the presence of Lord, the divinity, everywhere. Now, there is another beautiful prayer, many of you know it. Om Gandhad Dwaram Duradharsham Nityapustam Karishanim Ishwarim Sarvabhutanam Tam Yopahavishriyam. No? Remember Nima? What does it mean? Gandhad Dwaram Duradharsham. One who walks back, one who comes in and out, walks back and forth, or the one to whom you reach by passing through the gate of Gandha, fragrance. There is a unique fragrance in everything. Anything that is solid and tangible has its own unique smell, fragrance. through our limited sense capacity of smell, we are able to identify only certain smell, certain degree of smell, certain shade of smell. But when you cultivate sensitivity to your own smell, you can really, suddenly you see a vast universe which you can comprehend through smell. There have been, you know, Ayurvedic practitioners, those who don't see patients, just wear a cloth for 6 to 8 hours, touching the body, pack it, and send it to that specialist, Ayurvedic specialist. You can complete diagnosis of your internal states through smell. Now, many of these things are coming into light. That those dogs, those who are able to smell cancer, now they are trying to analyze what kind of fingerprint of smell is being registered in the dog, and translate that dog's experience into through your artificial intelligence, and standardize it. Perhaps there will come a time where all you have to do is just, and that's it. Entire diagnosis is done. Gandha dwaram duradharsham. The one who is the gandha, the earth element and its corresponding subtle tanmatra, which is smell, itself is the gateway. Duradharsham, which is unstoppable, whose power is absolutely unrestricted and unstoppable. Nityapustam, that which is in eternally in an unfailing way, is capable of providing nourishment. Nityapustam and Karishinim. And who resides in your waste matter. Give a fancy term, microbiota. And ancients call it poop. There is such an amazing intelligence loaded with all the healing powers that you are seeking. Anything, any kind of healing power. Depending on how much we come in touch with that force and reality and discover the mystery that is there in our microbiota, perhaps one day we might be able to take care of all the diseases and throw away all the machines, but it will be a very big loss for the industry. Therefore, probably, at least for next 100 years, our pharmaceutical industry will not allow us to go that far, keep the microbiota captive. No, but nitya pustam karishanim ishwarim sarvabhutanam. She is the Ishwari, the presiding force of the Lord residing in each of us, and making sure that we are fully taken care of. That one divine force manifests itself, at least minimum minimum of 100 trillion entities resides in us without burdening us with her presence. So beautifully that 100 trillion microbiota are there in us and we are not so fully aware of their existence. From deep within, without seeking any recognition, without seeking any thanks, 100 trillion divinities sitting in our gut are constantly serving us. Now, this is a way of looking at this whole phenomena. Ishwarim Sarabhutanam. And then says, Tamihopahavishriyam. I invoke, you know, and I welcome that divinity. The point is here that in order to practice bhakti, first we have to create a system in our mind whereby we are able to really touch and feel the presence of the divinity. And then create a system where all these so-called different divinities, because we are very good at compartmentalizing things. We are good at dismembering. And then work very hard to again put together. No? This is a process. So that's what, you know, each time when somebody tells me about flour, for example, or milk, the milk we drink, it just makes me laugh. You know? That milk we are drinking, first it has gone through an amazing process of, you know, separating this element from this element and this element and from this element, and then put together in our, you know, according to the way we want. So the whole milk is never whole milk. Do you know that? No. There is a gentleman in South India, his name is Anil Reddy. So he ran his dairy. So in India and in the United States, the definition of whole milk is totally different. Here, when your milk contains 4% fat, it's called whole milk. In Europe, when it contains 6%, it's called whole milk. In India follows European system. And the definition of fresh milk is not what you think. Milk is milk as long as it meets the criteria of all the ingredients in this white liquid. And that's standard accepted in the industry. Okay. Milk powder. All the fat. It's so difficult in America to find, you know, milk powder the way milk powder should be. Milk, if it is milk powder, it should be milk. And everything that exists in the milk should be there in that powder. But no, it's not necessary. We are good at dismantling things and then putting back according to our convenience. So therefore, what happens is we have already dismantled the idea of the divinity. Somewhere, according to us, there is divinity, and somewhere it's not. How many of you have ever thought that there is as much of the presence of the divinity in your toilet as it is in your temple? No? How many of you are really as comfortable in invoking the presence of divinity in your bathroom than you are when you are at a shrine? So there is a big difference between the presence of the divinity in the urinals of the airport and somewhere else. So the mental conditioning is there. And that mental conditioning is so strong that we carry that mental conditioning wherever we go. Our world off. Our samskaras, our vasanas, our subtle tendencies, you know, travels everywhere we travel. Therefore, we have very unique sense of identifying the presence of, sensing the presence of divinity somewhere more prominently and somewhere not so prominently. What this bhakti yoga tells us, that you start with experiencing the presence of divinity somewhere in more prominent way, that's okay. master that art which allows you to experience the presence of divinity in your sacred rock, in your temple, church, or let's say in your yantras, mandalas, or wherever, or certain shrines. But now bring it out, expand it, because that there is a very amazing truth. The truth is that this world has put our entire temple, church, and mosques in a prison. How? That is a place where you should not be dying. So our sacred places have been isolated from our day-to-day existence. We are supposed to go and die in a place where no one wants to go and die. That's called hospital. Whole life, we try to go to the church and be a good person by going to church. And when we are dying, we are supposed to go somewhere else. And after we are already dead, then somebody from the church may come and say a prayer. See here, this whole system is very bizarre. There is higher, there is a greater concentration of divinity in the temple. And we are supposed to find our way somewhere outside the temple. Okay? In Bhakti Yoga, it is very important to pay attention to this phenomena and start cultivating a mind that sees the divinity everywhere. Sab jag jani. It's like that divinity pervades everything. And that is what you read. As part of your Bhakti Yoga practice, you read scriptures. But when you read it, you have to read it through your heart. In Narada's Bhakti Sutra, which is the subject I'm trying to just squeeze and present it to you in most accessible manner, there is a sutra that a Bhakti Yogi, upon experiencing the divinity, stavdho bhavati. He or she gets frozen in time. He becomes like an ignorant and just totally inert and stupid. He sings and dances, cries and laughs, and begins to live like a crazy person, not to be understood by anyone. Now, how will you translate it? How do you read it? You become Bhakti Yogi so that you become crazy, you become stupid, you dance, you cry, you know. You become, you know, in other words, you become schizophrenic, you know. What is this? What it means is your whole way of looking at things change. You rise above all these man-made limitations and begin to feel the presence of the divinity. So now what happens is these saints, those who are declared as saints, one of their greatest hallmark of their being saint or whether they qualify to be saint or not is healing power. As you read scriptures and you read, you know, stories here and there, turmeric has the capacity to heal to a certain extent, normally. It's approximately 2.5% is the curcumin ingredient, which is active ingredient for inflammation and for that which is supposed to help you reduce your tumor, etc. So when you have 100 grams, which is almost quarter of a pound of turmeric, how much do you get? You get 2.5 grams, 2500 milligrams of curcumin. And when you eat quarter of a pound of turmeric, you know how it feels? Very bad, you know, you can't, you know, you will throw up. That much curcumin you need to have in order to see a good effect. So there is a process, isolate curcumin from the rest and put in the capsule, swallow it, fine, then it will do its job. Whereas it has been observed, someone who is connected to the turmeric and the divinity in the turmeric doesn't need to, you know, really go that far. It had been noticed, you know, I've seen. My son had a bizarre symptom when he was just only five, 6 years old. He had 7, 8 big spikes coming out from his knee, from this kneecap area, skin, you know, and really looked like a spike. So Swamiji said, one day he noticed, hey, what is this? It was summertime, so he had just shorts and running around. So it was there. I said, Swamiji, I don't know. He said, toh bilkul khatal wala baba lag raha hai. You know, it looks like, you know, a spike baba. And so I don't even remember. Unfortunately, we never wrote it down. Pat was there somewhere. So he told Pat to give him, you know, just one dose of some homeopathic medicine. Really, literally, within 8 hours time, 6, 8 hours time, it just started, it just vanished. It just, whole thing vanished, gone, finished. That is not possible. Even if it is, let's say, one super heavy dose of 1 mg or 10 mg, and it will continue doing its work for next 6 months and things like that in homeopathic system. Still, it takes time for all those growth, the growth that took place, you know, in the last 6 months, 1 year time, it will take at least, you know, 1 month, 2 months, or at least couple of weeks to disappear. But it disappeared in a few hours' time. Now, there is a medicinal property in a particular homeopathic medicine. But it is further awakened, enlightened, illuminated. Its sattvic property is in the sattva, rajas and tamas, which are the inherent properties of everything that exists in the universe, is awakened. And it accelerated. Yoga Sutra very clearly describes that how does it happen. Upon awakening of these fundamental forces, four things, fundamental forces of sattva and rajas and tamas, four things happens. And what is that? It's much, much higher reality when it vibrates, when it pulsates. It is Sutra 2-3, commentary of Vyasa. It does four things. Number one, it strengthens, awakens and strengthens the properties of activities of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Gunadhikaram drani kurvanti. One. Number two. Parinamam avasthapayanti. It sets the stage for a transformation, change to take place. Number three. Karya karana srotansi unnamanti. It pulls together, it unites, it fuses the currents of cause and effect. And fourth, it paraspar anugraha tantri bhutva karma vipakam. They become mutually supportive, rajas, sattva, and tamas. In normal circumstance, darkness and light can't exist. Inertia and activity don't exist. And yet, in a so-called divine context, higher context, this force of activity can breathe life into inertia. And inertia can, share its capacity of stability with the activity. And thus, a unique alchemy develops there. And it is in the presence of that unique alchemy the actions we have performed in the past begins to bear fruit. Now here, it's a simple recognition that the divine mother, divine force, now it's not just a force, it's not electricity which you pay a bill, only then you get the electricity. It is divine force, divine mother, divinity, residing in the turmeric. And turmeric, I'm giving you example, although I love turmeric, in addition to this, just an example. It is a divinity. It is living reality. It is a goddess. It is very loving, caring mother who literally lives in that. And it is that loving, caring mother that who doesn't seek any recognition from us. It just does its work. So, a person of pure heart, a person who has removed all these human conditionings of seeing something different from us, seeing something as consumable items and everything is commodity, everything is to be possessed and consumed, one who has overcome all these conditions, that person's words are enough. Simple recognition that you are in pain, may God bless you and overcome your pain. And by the way, just take a spoonful of turmeric. It's done. No? Take lemon water. Many such examples I see, Somebody was suffering from low fever for more than 1 year, and their children live in New Jersey, Vandana Sharma. So Dr. Om Sharma was suffering from fever and he went through all the tests and everything, nothing was working out. So their children asked, did you tell Swami? No, what will he do? So I never told him. No, but Dad, you should tell him. Swamiji was in India. So one day he was walking with Swamiji. Swami said, how are you? Fine, I'm having this fever around 100 or 100.5. And Swami said, just take lemon water with honey. And that's it. And but he never took it. 3 months later, children asked again, did you tell Swami? He said, yeah. So what did he say? Take lemon water and honey. But did you take it? No. So, Dad, why don't you take it? He said, well, how is it going to help? But take it, Dad, his daughter said from New Jersey. Took it. Fever never returned. Gone. Finished. And, now, This is called miracle. It is miracle because we do not know how it works. Those who know how it works, it's not a miracle. Who are those who know it? They are the ones who know that every nook and cranny of our universe, every single cell of our body, every single speck of dust, from subatomic particles all the way to the mighty stars, everything is infused with that higher divinity. The more we cultivate this attitude, the more prepared we are to truly love God. And then thereafter, life itself becomes a wonder. We experience life as a wonder. So I will stop here. It is 9:20, something like that. So, what do we get from here? Expand your understanding of the divinity. Matter is matter only for those who do not know that this matter has a mother. And after giving birth to this matter, the mother has entered the child itself. The only difference is that before the matter manifested, it was inside the womb of this mother called Divine Mother, the Divinity. And after giving birth, Divinity has entered this matter. And that is why matter is pulsating, living. Matter has become a sentient living being. And there is nothing like insentient anything in the world. Everything is completely living and thriving. And Bhakti Yoga begins by understanding this fact. And Bhakti Yoga means to go on reinforcing this understanding so that we are no longer separate from divinity. You know. And the day we are able to really feel the nose we blow, nose we normally use for blowing our mucus out, even that space inside our nose is filled with that divinity. Our space in our ears, when you put your finger, stir it, and you smell, it smells yucky. But something goes wrong in the same very space. And one day you stop hearing. There is no sensation left. And not only that, you don't hear things. Your entire balance is gone. Then you realize which one is more important. That yucky smell in your ears or that Shakti, the divinity that is there making sure that you remain intact. Even the whole thought process is completely crippled. One day, when you have difficulty in seeing you, you know, children sometimes, they don't have glasses and the parents don't know that there is some problem with the child's eyesight. Child is behaving like, you know, it has attention deficit problem. Even yourself, you feel slowly, slowly, when you don't realize what's wrong with you, you lose your interest in reading. You know? And suddenly one day you discover that you had some problem with seeing. And as soon as you get your glasses, your interest in reading comes back. Then you realize that these senses are really, really infused with much higher divinity. And this is what we have to contemplate in our daily life to really digest this understanding. You know? And this self-reflection, self-observation, self-analysis, self-examination is called way to digest this understanding. And the more we digest this understanding, the easier it is for us to practice this Ishwara Pranidhana, trustful surrender, which constitutes the core of Bhakti Yoga. God bless you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you.